Oh, fill my cup, let it overflow. Oh, fill my cup, let it overflow. Oh, fill my cup, let it overflow. Let it overflow with love.
Good morning and welcome to We Are Just Christians. Thanks you very much for tuning in today. We really appreciate it. My name is Mike Schmidt. I'm with the Church of Christ on Savona Boulevard. I'm one of the elders and preacher. As usual, my partner today is Gary Jones. How are you, Gary? We try to present a show about being just a Christian and not being part of some man-made denomination. That's what the show We Are Just Christians is about. And it's a live call-in show. And so we take your calls, comments, and questions about almost anything that you can think of, whether it's cultural, whether it's societal, anything like that. We will take your calls and questions on that. Any comments you have about religion or this show or the Bible, we'd be glad to take them about that. And whether you agree or disagree, any of those things, that's okay with us. We try to have a conversation with our callers who get a hold of us either by text or email or by a phone call. We'd like to have a conversation with you about things that are important to all of us who are listening.
Sorry, I missed your greeting, Mike.
Oh, that's okay. We'll make sure you were there.
I was checking on something.
Okay. Yeah, we're all strapped in here on Skype with our computers and headsets and whatnot. We look pretty professional, don't we, Gary? Yeah.
By the way, you can listen to us streaming on your computer at WPSL.
Yes, that sometimes we fail to mention that. That if you're not near a radio or your friends may want to listen to the show somewhere else.
Or you can, on your phone.
On the phone. You can listen at WPSL.com. There's a Listen Live button there on their website, and click that, and it'll bring up the show. You can also find this show on Apple iTunes or any place you find a podcast, I think. You can find this show there under We Are Just Christians, and the archives of the show will be there. Every now and then we have a recording failure. I think we've got some of that straightened out. Hopefully that's straightened out. But in any event, this show, as I said, is live. So let me give you the numbers where you can reach us here at WPSL. We Are Just Christians. You can reach us at 772-340-1590, 772-340-1590, the regular call-in number for WPSL. You can also reach us by text. I'm going to give you two text numbers. One's mine, one is Gary's. They're very similar, so write them down. You can text us not only during the show. We'll try to follow along during the show with a text, and we get those sometimes. Or we certainly can respond to your text during the week, and you can call us back anytime you want to or text us anytime you want to during the week. That number is 772-260-6120, 772-260-6120. 6120 is my text number. That's for Mike. And Gary's text number is 772-260-6220 is Gary's number. And so, like I say, we'd be glad to correspond with you pretty much any time. All you got to do is text us, and we'll get back with you about whatever it may be, whether you like or dislike the show or something we've said, or whether you want to bring up a new topic, which we really appreciate. We'd like to hear from you. This show will be a lot better for everybody concerned and more interesting if you'll just take the chance that what's on your mind, whatever small you may think it may be or unimportant, just throw it out there, and you'll find that other people are very interested in that. And like I said, we don't even mind whether you disagree or not. We're going to give you the last word. This show is not about baiting you into saying something so we can mock you or anything like that. That I know that people do that, but that's not what we're about here on this show. We want to have a conversation, as I said, with our listeners. So if you have a question or comment, 772-340-1590. So Gary and I usually come prepared to talk about different things. We're prepared to talk about whatever you want to discuss. So we're going to throw out a couple subjects. If you want to talk about those, great. If not, then bring up your own subject, and we'll be glad to follow along with that. Gary, you told me you had something about honesty or lying, integrity, that you wanted to bring up?
Well, basically,
don't make it too political now.
Gary can't help that. That's just basically because of what I've been observing, not only over the hurricane coverage, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the hurricane was not an event they should cover, but the way the news media has been going lately in the last couple of years, 3 or 4 years, it just hurts me to listen to it. And so some scripture came to mind when I thought about that.
Well, give us an example of what you're talking about there.
Well, basically,
I think I know what you're going to.
Yeah, basically, there was a thing on the internet. I think it was MSNBC. This reporter was shown in a picture, and he's holding on to something and struggling to stand up in the wind and talking about how bad it is. And if you look behind him, there's this couple strolling along, nice and calm, and you know, it basically wasn't what he was presenting.
He was pretending that the wind. The story was much bigger than it was at
exactly,
that moment.
Exactly. And what do we hear lately? You know, most of the time things are going on. Exodus 23, verses 1 through 9. I just want to read a couple of, you know, just three verses there. And he says, and this is part of the old law, but it fits with what Jesus said, and I think it's part of what we should, you know, what he says. We shouldn't be lying or practicing deceit in this manner. He says, you shall not circulate a false report. Now, Mike, what if the news media took that one seriously, okay?
Well, Gary, it's one thing to say, this is what some people say, this is what we think.
Right.
But to present what is simply speculation as if it's fact or a completely wrong fact.
Or, in fact, it's been proven they knew it was not fact when they presented it.
Right.
He says, you shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil. You know, what have we seen?
Just jump in on that.
Yeah. Nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice.
Right.
You know, and we've got people responsible for justice apparently doing that very thing. It's just... I don't know.
I wish I didn't know you were going to talk about this. I can probably dig it up here if I looked hard enough.
Well, if you hadn't realized, we don't coordinate.
No,
so.
We don't necessarily, and that we try to do that. It's kind of on purpose. But I got involved in a discussion a few weeks ago I guess it would be considered an evangelical or religious blog, and there was an article about this sexual harassment stuff that's been in the news, which I'm very much against, and we can talk about that maybe. I thought I might talk about that a little bit this morning, but in any event, what the gist of the article was more or less saying it doesn't really matter. And they were talking about the role of a minister or a person like us, Gary, in this situation. And when someone comes and tells us something, what's our duty, what's our responsibility as a counselor, although you and I, neither one are licensed counselors by the state of Florida, but we do counsel people all the time. That's what elders do. But in any event, the gist of it was that as I got it, that it doesn't really matter. You shouldn't worry about whether the person is telling you the truth or not. You should just follow along with them and should believe everything. And I in the comments, disputed that. I said, as one who has dealt with these accusations in real life, not theoretically, when people come to me with this and tried to handle them and went to court and got people, helped people put people in prison, I think that the truth is extremely important. You have to get to the truth of the matter.
Right.
Oh, my goodness, did I get excoriated in the remarks and the other comments? You should never question a person who comes to tell you that they've been harassed or molested. You should never question them. You should always believe them. And I just said, this is nonsense. It just doesn't, it's nonsense to think that any person who comes to me, and I guess if they were a minister, they would understand this better, any person who comes to me and tells me something, that I automatically take their word at face value and then launch off into a whole series of reactions to what they tell me simply based on their statement at that moment. That would be completely irresponsible. And I would be often, not often, but many times I would have done exactly what this verse tells you not to do. I would have been a false witness. I would have circulated a false report. I would have been all these things. And the worst part of it, Gary, in the real analysis of it, this is the point I was trying to make. Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. If we want to be free, then we're going to have to seek the truth, whether it's religious truth or truth about our own life or somebody else's life. But I just said I wouldn't really be able to help the person.
Well, and unless you deal with reality, which is the truth, you can't help.
So years ago, a young lady came to me and said that she was being molested by one of her family members. Okay? And so I had to try to, I loved her. I was going to try to help her. My wife and I were about through this, since she came to me as a minister and a friend to try to get some help in this. Now, I didn't know when I first heard it for sure if what she was telling me was true, part true, or altogether false. I didn't know that until I asked more questions, did a little bit of looking into this in the background, and then I could ascertain the truth of it. But the upshot of all of it was, Gary, I intended to help her. And if these accusations were true, then I had to pursue them in one way. If they were only partly true,
you have to pursue them in another way.
And if they were false, she still needed help.
Yes.
She needed help as much or more, maybe, if they were false accusations, because something was still wrong. And so I, in acting what I thought was in a loving way, I tried to find out what actually was the truth so we could go attack the problem in the right place and then set her free if possible.
Well,
now that seems reasonable to me, Gary, but that was met with scorn and derision today because of people's not really seeking the truth. It's how people feel. Every response was, well, you're going to make people feel bad by not believing them. Well, you know, the whole thing is not always about feelings at the moment.
It's about how to fix problems.
How to fix problems. It's about reality and the truth. And the truth is, in the long run, people will feel better when the truth is shown.
Talking about Mike, you had to get to the truth of the matter. I just read verses 1 through 3 of Exodus 23. You shall not circulate a false report.
Right.
Nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. Look at verse 7. Keep yourself from a false matter. Isn't that exactly what you're trying to do to help someone? You've got to stay away from the false part of it.
I can't help them. If I'm walking around in darkness too, I can't help them. And the trouble with sin is, and I say this, it seems like it's impossible people believe this, with great compassion for those who are victims of sin, is that until we can get to the truth of the matter, I can't really help them unravel it all and make a true and accurate response to what needs to be done. I can't even really go after... See, if you go to someone and say, so-and-so says you did this, and they've done something almost like that but not exactly like that, then you give them a built-in defense to push you away. Oh, that never happened. Yeah, because it happened at 10 o'clock in the morning and not 8 o'clock in the morning. You see, that's how liars are liars, you know. But if I can really get the truth of the matter, I find that often we can then get where we need to be, which is repentance and sometimes forgiveness.
Oh, and,
but without the truth, you can't get there.
And even when you're accused, especially of somebody who is a... What is it? Unidentified source.
Yeah.
I mean, where's the credibility to that?
You have to realize when you say things like that, unidentified sources, what it is. But I've had people, well, I guess it's a touchy subject for me a little bit, having been lied about before. And I'm a very proud and sensitive individual, as you know, Gary. So being lied about is really problematic to me. And I had one fellow accuse me of something, and to other people, not to me, of course.
Well, that's generally the way it happens.
Yes, he accused me to other people, and I went to him. Well, see, I tried to do what I thought was the right thing, and I said, okay, so this man said this about me, and I knew it wasn't true, or I didn't understand why he would do that. I didn't know the truth. I didn't know why, what, when, where. I didn't know 100% that he even said what they said he said, right?
Yep.
So I went to find out the truth. Guess where I went? I went to him. Well, he doesn't like that because people don't like to have to talk about these things. But I said, well,
see, that the very first thing was against what God tells us as Christians we should do when we have a problem with somebody. Who's the first person we're supposed to go see?
Go see them.
And
it takes little
it, it takes a lot
that.
Of courage
it's a
to
risk
do
to do that. But I went and I said, now this is what I've heard that you said about me. Is that true? Is that what you said? And he admitted it. He said, yes, I did say that. And I said, but you know that that's not true. He used a word like charismatic, you see.
Yeah.
He told people I was charismatic. Well, he knew that that word had two different definitions. One of them means that you believe in the miraculous operation of the Holy Spirit today and charismatic gifts. And that was the context of his remarks to them. The other means that I have a very engaging personality, very charismatic and charming. Okay, so when I confronted him and said, so why did you say that? You know that that's not true, that I believe in present-day miraculous charismatic gifts for the church. He said, well, they don't know that that's what I meant. So he intentionally used a word and said to them something that could be taken both ways, knowing that they would take it the wrong way, and then being able to use it as a defense, well, I meant
that's
the other
not,
way.
That's
when
not
necessary.
The way I meant it, yeah.
Or he could say to me, well, that's not the way I meant it. And basically what it was, yeah, they'll never know. They don't know that. So that is a really, that's level 401 in lying. I'm probably level 101 most of the time. He's in the master's degree or doctoral level of being deceptive. And this is... was a supposedly very religious and well-respected man. And this was not the only thing he did. Now, that's the kind of bearing a false witness where you know that what you're saying could be taken two ways and you're hoping that people take it the wrong way and then you can run for your defense again in the other way. What do you think God thinks about that?
Well,
it's despicable, isn't it?
Yes, and it's just, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, Exodus 20:16, all of these things. Basically, you know, especially when we go into the Old Testament the New Testament talking about lying, he talks about you shall not lie to one another. That's a form of it.
Right.
That's a point. You shall not lie to one another. He says, basically, you don't want to circulate a false report. Well, he was circulating a false report. That was
right. And people do this sometimes intentionally, like he was doing it.
Yeah.
And sometimes they do it because they're careless or irresponsible.
Yes.
And I think there are members of our national media who are careless and irresponsible.
Well, you're being kind to them.
I know. But there are a few like that. And there's others who are intentionally hoping, like he did, that people will have a wrong impression, wrong idea, and go the wrong direction. And those two are, they're both condemned in the Bible. If I'm going to communicate things to people, I need to be responsible in my communications about others so that I don't do that. And if I don't know the truth about something or for sure, I need to make sure it stays that way. But if I tell you a rumor, Gary, how uncommon is it for when you repeat that rumor for the other person now to take it as a fact? Well, that's what happens most of the time.
Most of the time.
Rumors become facts eventually.
And it seems to get worse because the way I may have understood it may be a little bit more harsh than the way you actually said it to begin with. So these things tend to snowball. They basically, I'll use a term unfamiliar in South Florida. But that's what happens. And it all fits within the heart of basically what he's saying, you shall not circulate a false report. At least to me, that's the way it seems to be worded.
You've heard me say probably, Gary, before that people think sins like fornication or adultery or things like that or murder, these are common sins. But they're not anywhere near as common as lying or deception.
Oh.
Not even the same ballpark, really. Of the deception people play, and self-deception, too, much less
right.
Intentional deception.
Well, the real problem is, and the reason I brought it up, is not that I think I'm going to change any of these reporters or any of the people that are out there in politics trying to do this on purpose. What I'm trying to do is be careful with what you say. The book of Ecclesiastes is very explicit in a lot of cases about you need to really pay attention to what you say.
Yes, you make a vow, you better keep it.
You make a vow, you better keep it.
You better
not speak quickly before you've thought. Because when you fall into that category, you know, the very end of the New Testament, Revelation 21, beginning in verse 6, he says, "And he said to me, 'It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son.' But the cowards, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers, the sexual immoral, the sorcerers, the idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death."
Yes, there with all the other wicked sins. That's the point I was making. Right there it is.
Right there it is. With sexual immorality, murderers. You're in a category of murderers. You know, it's all right there.
I think that the reason that we see this, there's two reasons, obviously more than this, but I'll isolate two for the sake of this conversation. Being the callers want to get in on this, I'll give you the numbers more. Well, let me give you the numbers before I say this. 772-340-1590. 772-340-1590 is the number here in Port St. Lucie. You can reach us. You can reach us by text also. If you'd like to text the show live or even during the week, 772-260-6120, 772-260-6120. Now, Gary, two reasons that I think this is prominent right now in our culture. Lying has always been here. Seems like it's taken. The thing that bothers me is it's not very. People don't have much of an objection to it. They seem to go along with it. But two reasons. One of them is the general cultural milieu of postmodernism, which says there's no such thing as truth. Your truth, we have your truth, my truth, and then somebody else's truth. We have to all find the truth for ourselves, our own truth. That may be true for you, we'll say, but it's not true for me. And so we have this general idea that there's no such thing as truth. Well, where does that leave us with respect to lying then? Well, it leaves it. Pretty much throws that out the window as being a problem, because nobody really believes that there's such a thing as truth, and I think that's particularly true in the elite classes of people in our culture from whence the media often come, is they have been educated very clearly from the time they're young that there is no such thing as truth. They believe that you and I, who think there's such a thing as absolute truth, that we are really imbecilic dinosaurs who are dangerous to believe in absolute truth. And so it doesn't surprise me that it's hard to find somebody in those professions who believes in truth telling. Because the truth is what they think it ought to be. It isn't what they think it is. If it's what they think it ought. The reason the guy was holding on to the pole, Gary, is because he believes that in man-made global warming is making the hurricanes worse. That's a truth he believes in. And so whatever means he has to go to get that meta-narrative across to the common man who is dense and uneducated is okay. It's moral to hold on to a pole and pretend like being blown away when you're not, because it's more important to get, quote-unquote, the truth of global warming across and move people's emotions than it is just to tell the truth of a storm. You and I are looking at the news trying to find out what's really happening.
Yes.
But they have a different motive as far as what they believe the truth is. That's postmodernism. You see. And the other thing is, because most of us are all out to, and it goes along with this, for our own self-interest in everything, and therefore lying is...
That's
the means by which you achieve self-interest.
Right. It's the first thing that comes along. It's the first opportunity that you have to promote that.
We only lie when we think it benefits us.
Yes.
In some fashion, whether it does or not. And, you know, James addresses this. You probably want to go someplace else, Gary, but James addresses this in chapter 3 of his book in verse 13. Who is wise, understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in meekness of wisdom. So here's the meekness expressed in works. Meekness is the idea that you are not the most important person in the world. That's meekness. Understanding your place as not being the most important. So he says, but if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts,
yes,
do not lie and boast against the truth. Okay? So envy, that is looking at what other people have and wanting what they've got, always thinking other people have it better than you. Man, that's 21st century America, isn't it? That everybody's got it better than you, and you're being put upon and so forth, envying what they have, and wanting to be rich and famous and whatever the case may be. And then the self-seeking. He said those things lead to lying and boasting. And he says this wisdom does not descend from above. This wisdom is earthly, sensual, and demonic. For, now listen to this, for where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. What's the result of lying and deception?
Confusion.
Confusion. Not understanding the truth, people not being able to ascertain, get a hold of anything, confusion. The word there that's used for self-seeking, Gary, is an interesting one. It's not a common word in the Bible. It's only used 7 times in the New Testament. Erythria, if I'm pronouncing it right in Greek. Here's what it means. Electioneering or intriguing for office. Apparently in the New Testament, a courting distinction, meaning what you would do in a court of other people, in a group of people, a desire to put oneself forward, a partisan and fractious spirit which does not disdain the low arts. It does not disdain the low arts, meaning a self-seeking person doesn't mind how low they have to stoop to get their way and to improve their position in the group. Okay? And this is what we see in the political arena, in the entertainment arena, in the workplace, in churches.
Yes.
And sometimes in extended families, we see this self-seeking that does not disdain the low arts. Meaning it wouldn't... It doesn't mind stooping low to get its way. And lying is what James links with this electioneering. It's a part and parcel of it.
Well, and you don't necessarily have to tell an untruth to present something as a deception.
Yeah.
Now there.
Well,
now,
I am charismatic, Gary. You know this.
but basically, you can make a deception out of something, which I think is. It's more covered in that you shall not circulate a false report. You can manage not to lie, but create the deception.
Right.
Now
that's a low art. That's skillful.
That's
but it's done all the time.
Yes. That's where the talented politician comes in. But basically, now, I don't argue that there is not time for deception sometimes. Deception that is going to save a life, or deception that's going to prevent violence.
Well, when you're going to walk into a whole other mind.
Yeah.
But I understand where you're going with this.
You understand where I'm going. Mm-hmm. That can be done. And it seems that God does in sometimes approve of that. But you have to be really, really careful when you start walking in that territory. That's full of landmines.
When you are going to be able to, when you go there, you first must be of a character that does understand true truth, honesty, and therefore you can see the limits of that. Well, the illustration is given that you read in the book Situation Ethics by Joseph Fletcher in the late 60s, early 70s, that started this whole idea of situation ethics. One of the illustrations he gives there, more or less, I'll paraphrase, for those who might have the book in front of them, I might have it all wrong, but I don't think I have it too far wrong, that he says a man comes to your door waving a gun, asking if Gary Jones is there, and you've just ran to my house for protection. He's trying to kill him. And he says a man's waving a gun saying, "Where's Gary Jones? I'm going to kill him. Is he here? Is he here?" What are you supposed to tell him? The truth?
Well,
or a lie? Or what do you do? So he presents this idea that love is the overriding factor, that love can cause you to lie. I don't buy that per se, but I wouldn't have a problem misdirecting this person in some way.
The question is, and how would you misdirect that person and not lie?
If you can't, can you?
Yeah,
can you do it quickly?
Well, basically, if he said, "Is so-and-so there?" and so-and-so was there yesterday and left, I would tell him, "So and so was here yesterday and left."
Right.
That's the truth.
Well, I would just say, well, what's the definition of there? Well, I'll do the Bill Clinton defense.
Well, yeah.
And for a while, stall him long enough. But anyway, no, you're right. You could do. There's lots of ways to do that. But see, that takes a desire and a knowledge of the truth before it works. When you don't believe in truth, then there isn't really any such thing as a lie. So that kind of misdirection becomes commonplace in your life.
Okay,
it becomes the ordinary thing that you do, not a rare exception under extraordinary life. Changing circumstances, it becomes the thing that you do constantly. There's a big
right.
difference in those two things.
Well, and there again, what's the motivation for that? That was to essentially prevent what appears to be violence as opposed to benefiting me, either monetarily or any other way.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Right.
That's where we're coming into. What's the motivation for it? I'll just tell you, I think there's an example of this. And I'm going to go ahead and read that. We'll go. It's in Samuel. Samuel chapter 16, verses about 1 through 5. And this is a period. Now, here you have to know the truth of the setting. What's the setting? God just told Samuel to go anoint David king. Saul is still king. And Saul is kind of going off the deep end. And in verse 1, he says, "Now the Lord said to Samuel, 'How long will you mourn for Saul, seeking that I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go, and I am sending you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided myself a king among his sons.' And Samuel said, 'How can I go? If Saul hears it, he will kill me.' But the Lord said, 'Take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Then invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do, and you shall anoint for me the one that I shall name.' Now, that has impact on me because the Lord told him to do this. Now, Samuel was truthful. He was going down there to offer sacrifice. He did. He did exactly what he was told to do. So he did not lie.
Right.
But he kept, actually, the purpose from Saul. I think this is what we're talking about. This is the same kind of situation you were using there.
I think so, yes, probably was.
And
that's kind of what Joseph Fletcher was getting at in that, although I don't
okay.
agree with the book. There's cases like that. He uses several of them. And the trouble with that is when that becomes a way of life that you just simply...
Well, if you start using this for every application and everything, you're going to get in a real quagmire.
Yeah, well, it's going to disrupt your character.
Pretty soon, you're not going to be able to take the integrity that's here. You're going to be off in a lie.
The other side of this, Gary, use a simple illustration. There's another side to this business of honesty, since we're exploring this maybe even more than we intended today. But someone says, your wife says, "Does this dress make me look fat?" Well, now, there's no good answer to that question.
Right.
Really. Because whatever you say,
Even if you avoid answering the question.
If you avoid answering the question, that's not going to be good. If you say no, and it does, that's not really helpful to her because she's maybe... I think sometimes with those you have to figure out, so what is the purpose of the question? What do they really want to know? If you can ascertain that. And there are various ways of giving an answer. Or, "Do you like my hat?" You know, the old Dr. Seuss book. You know, "Do you like my hat?" Well, there's honesty and then there's unkindness, you see. Some people use honesty to cover their unkindness. But that's self-seeking also. We can use honesty in a self-seeking way also. So we only tell the truth when it benefits us, and we only lie when it benefits us. You see
yes,
what I'm saying?
Yes.
Or we tell the truth in such a way that it benefits us or causes harm to another. And that isn't the right way to use words either. Our speech must be seasoned with salt, with grace, Paul says in Colossians chapter 4, verse 2, that it may give grace to him that hears. So our speech is to edify or build up those around us, to do good, not just to do harm, you see.
Well, he says, in another way of saying that, I think, is basically in Exodus 23, he says, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. If you're perverting justice, no matter what you do, you know, in other words, no matter what you say or how you behave, if you pervert justice, what are you doing? This is the idea behind this. Don't circulate a false report. Don't bear false witness against your neighbor. All of these things are related. God is after you to promote justice and to promote helping others.
Right.
And to promote protection of those who need protecting.
Not being deceptive.
So basically you have to look at what is the effect this is going to have. Now, I'm going to tell you, I believe an outright untruth is basically what he's talking about in the book of Revelation. That's all liars. That's an outright untruth, and they exist.
Oh, yes.
And people do that. There's no question about that.
Well, let's just take your initial example of the reporter pretending that the wind is about to blow him away when obviously it wasn't, because he's trying to advance a larger agenda. You know, the fact is, Gary, I think the studies could show you that that kind of behavior actually has the opposite effect over time. These
yes.
elites don't realize it, but they're having the opposite effect on people as far as believing that man is causing global warming, is making hurricanes worse. The data says that we have fewer and less powerful hurricanes than we've had in a few centuries today. But because we know, you know, there's other reasons why they seem to be greater. But the truth is, it causes people to not believe what you're saying. It pushes people the other way. And just like a liar, when a liar is telling the truth, you don't believe him because you know he's a liar. And you know the old fable about the boy who cried
wolf
is about as simple as it can be. These are not difficult concepts. And, you know, those kind of lessons used to be ingrained upon us when we were children, about the value of telling the truth. But today, the truth is whatever I feel it is at the moment, and so those kind of lessons are considered moralistic rather than essential parts of building character. But the verse I mentioned before is not Colossians 4:2. It's Colossians 4:5 and 6, verses 5 and 6. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside of Christ, redeeming the time. Let your speech be always with grace. Grace is goodness, simply put.
It's favor.
Favor, goodness. In other words, you have the other person's best interest at heart, and you're trying to convey good things. Seasoned with salt. Why do you season things with salt? So they go down easier. You put salt on food so that it tastes better as you eat it. It's the same food.
Takes the bitterness out of it.
Only with salt, it improves it so that it can go down into the digestion easier, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. So, this is the idea of building up or edifying people with what we say. And I'll look up, and there's another verse or two with this, of building up with our speech. Let all things be done with edification or with edifying, and all the things that we say. So in other words, as we speak to each other and talk about events that are happening, or does this dress make me look fat, whatever the question may be, however silly we may think it is, we have to have as Christians the ability to learn to season all of our speech with salt and make it with grace so that it can build up or edify each one.
Right.
And that is a very hard thing to do, but it can be done. Sometimes we may fail along the way, but that's better than just saying, well, I just say whatever comes to my mind. Heard a story years ago. I've got a preacher preached a sermon on, you know, the talents. One of them was given 5 talents, and he came back with 5 more. One was given 3, came back with 3 more. One was given 1, he buried it in the ground, and all that. And so, see, this preacher was talking about, you know, what is your talent? What talents has God given you? So the old lady comes out the door, church door, after the sermon. This kind of thing happens to me all the time. And says, well, preacher, she says, I've got a talent. My talent is saying whatever's on my mind. that's my talent. And the preacher says, well, sister, that's a talent you should go out and bury. I don't think she was bragging, and he kind of turned it away. But if your idea of telling the truth is just saying whatever comes to your mind, however heartless, cruel, hurtful, destructive it might be, however you may betray someone's confidence or privacy, then that's not honesty. Well, it may be honesty in some raw fashion, but the Bible says there's more to it than that, isn't there? There's more to it than that. And so we have to take that into consideration. But if you don't have a basic sense of honesty and wanting to know the truth, one of the things that makes marriage useful, Gary, go back to this thing we've been talking about for several weeks, is what makes it powerful or important is I have to count on my mate to tell me the truth about things.
We have to understand each other.
Do I need to use more deodorant? or was I unkind to this person? Or what? We need someone who can, who that we know loves us, to tell us the truth about that. Or to say, when we think we failed, no, you didn't fail. This is what really happened there that you can't see. We need to know the truth. And it's hard to find people who love you enough who will tell you the truth in the right way.
Well, one of the things I think you said, talking about our speech should be seasoned with salt. One of the first things I think that would help us understand and practice that is Ecclesiastes 5, and I think you mentioned this earlier. He says in verse 2 of Ecclesiastes, do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. Well, it's a good idea not to let your heart utter anything hastily before anyone.
Right.
But certainly before God. He says, for God is in heaven and you on earth, therefore let your words be few. That would be a good start in many cases about how speech be seasoned with salt. That would be a pretty good start. Now, I'll have to confess, I keep seeing this every day, and I would like for our listeners to think about what they should do when they look about them. You should be looking about you every day to have enough of the Word of God within you to see the things that are done that are both for what He says, are consistent with what He says, and both are against what He says. We should be able to train ourselves each day to look about us and see what should have been done in those cases. What would God have had us do in the things that we see about us? That's one of the things that I've come to learn more, I think, in the last few years of my life than I did certainly when I was younger. That I need to train myself. And what that does is it keeps you from missing opportunities. I think I talked to you the other night about one of the biggest regrets that I have reviewing the things in my life is that I missed so many opportunities to do the right thing. And if we would train ourselves to do this, I think we would be pleasing to God, and we would be able to see the things and certainly see the things that we should do at those times as well.
Well, there's a time to speak and there's a time to be quiet. And not just see, you can be deceptive by saying nothing too.
Yes.
Sometimes when you know what needs to be said or know the truth and you don't say it, and you say so because it benefits you or because you don't say anything because it hurts someone else. You don't come to their defense because you want them to suffer. You know, you're also a liar there, too. That is, in a sense, bearing false witness by saying nothing. And so it's not as simple as it may sound, but you're right. We should have, in all of this, well, Paul says in Ephesians 4:29, Gary, let no corrupt word or speech proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. So here he says, a corrupt word is one that is distorted from its original nature. A corrupt speech is using the truth or an error for a purpose that hurts or brings things down or destroys things. Like meat, a piece of flesh that's good at one one day, the next day it's corrupted because its purpose, its nature has been altered slightly. Don't let that kind of speech or word come out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification. Edification there is the word for building up, encouraging, strengthening, building up. Our goal of speaking to every person that we talk to is to strengthen them and build them up for what is good in them. Bring out what is good in them. And sometimes that's a hard word of truth. Brother or sister, you have failed. This is wrong. You need to do better. Sometimes it's a word of encouragement. Sometimes it is trying to make the truth have some salt on it, palatable, a way to go down. I never forget, I love him so much for it. He's dead now. A friend of mine, a man who's older, age of my father years ago, that was a close friend of mine, and as a young preacher, he every now and then he'd take me aside, put his arm around me or something like that, and he'd tell me some real hard truth about Mike Schmidt. And it was done in such a way, though, that I could swallow it. He knew my pride. He understood my pride, and he knew how to get past that a little bit. He was trying to get around that to get to me so I could benefit, and he did it right. One time me and Judy were in my office. We had a bunch of three or four small kids, and he came and said, he just happened to come by the church building, and we're sitting there, here and I were sitting there talking. I was working, and he started talking to us about different things, and he talked to us about our kids a little bit. He was there for 45 minutes, an hour. He left, went on his way. We had a pleasant conversation, I thought. He left, and I told her, I said, you know, Judy, I think we just got yelled at. I think we just got taken to task about these children. And she said, you know, I think you're right. But he did it in such a way that it didn't devolve into a self. He didn't make her and I become self-defensive and reject what he was saying. Now, that is using good speech for necessary edification. And yet he told us the truth about what had to be said.
And that ability is rare.
It's rare. And I tried to learn from that, but I'm not very good at
it. And what does it point to us, though, that we should learn? I think it points to us that we should learn that even if it's not done that way, we should seriously consider what's done rather than become angry or...
That's wisdom.
Are resistant.
Wisdom is hearing the truth from your enemies and paying attention.
Right.
Or sorting out what they're saying that's not true from what's true. Once again, if you just say that whenever anybody comes to you and says whatever they say and you say you believe it because they're a victim, you think, you can't ever really help them. I'll go back to that again. Yeah. If someone comes to you and lays on you a big diatribe of criticism of you and you just dismiss all of it, because you didn't like the way it sounded, or you accept all of it, how do you help yourself? You don't. You have to try to use the Word of God to sort through what is true and what's right and what's not and throw it all away and keep it good.
And the key words there that you use, that you have to use the Word of God.
To know
that
they're making the truth. But I just think, the older I get, Gary, there's a few verses that jump out at me. You've heard me say these before. You shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. That isn't talking just about religious truth about the church or salvation or something.
It's talking about truth and honesty
in general.
In everything that you do in your life.
Right.
Because what happens when you don't? What's that thing, the conscience that bothers you?
Yeah. Jesus was a believer in absolute truth. He is the truth. I am the way,
the truth.
And the life. No man comes to the Father but by me, he said. So Jesus believed in absolute truth. Whether our culture does, whether every intellectual or elite person in our society does, it doesn't matter to the Christian. That's something that's just a societal condition. Ancient Greeks and Romans didn't particularly believe in absolute truth per se either. So what? The truth is the truth. There are some things that are absolutely true, and they are found fundamentally in the person of Jesus Christ, and we have to accept that that's a fact. And then, in knowing that some things are absolutely true, we must order our lives in accordance with that. Our speech, which is just an expression of what's in our mind, must be patterned after that. And if we don't start off with that foundation, everything in life becomes hazy and confusing and full of every vile deed, James says, right? Yes. All you got left is self-seeking and so forth. So this is where we are. It's a sad thing.
Because we see it all around us. This is the problem I have when I look around me and see what's going on now. And it burdens me. I'm saddened and in many ways melancholy because of what I see has happened to our society.
Well, because you see the damage it does to so many people.
Well, and
spiritual damage as much as
well. See,
else.
That's why I say learn to see these things and learn to understand what God expects our society should be. Because there is a judgment scene in Ezekiel that I quote often. And the reason I quote that is because I think it basically represents, in some ways, how God is going to judge us. And it's in Ezekiel 9. The glory of God is leaving the temple. That's the setting. And the prophet is watching the things that are happening. And he's leaving. And it says, and he called to the man clothed in linen who had a writer's inkhorn at his side. In other words, God's doing this. And the Lord said to him, go through the city, the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over all the abominations that are done within it. In other words, look for the men who are saddened by all this sin that you see.
Of course, he says, start at the temple of God, too.
Right. He says, to the others, he said in my hearing, go after him through the city, kill, and do not let your eyes spare, nor have any pity. Utterly slay old and young men, maidens, little children, and women, but do not come near anyone on whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary.
Begin at my sanctuary.
And so they began with the elders who were before the temple. But look who was saved in that judgment. Who was saved in that judgment?
The ones who knew the truth.
And who were saddened by what they were seeing.
Right.
To me, that's a tremendous lesson about how things... I think this is not specifically a judgment of the end of the world, but I think the end of the world is going to be
It was a judgment on their society, but right. The end of the world has elements like this.
Yes.
Yes. We got about 7 minutes left or so, and we've got plenty of time for a call. If you'd like to call in, 772-340-1590, 772-340-1590. How have you been affected by lying or mistruth? Where do you think this impacts you in your life? How have you handled situations where you had to tell people something unpleasant? Have you failed? Have you succeeded? How do you handle that? And we'd like to hear from you, 772-340-1590. If you'd like to text us at 772-260-6120 or 6220. 772-260-6120 or 6220. Gary, you know, I give myself an excuse, whether it's true or not, we can determine, but that I have on the background a lot of times when I'm at home reading or studying, I have the TV on or something in the background. It seems to help my tinnitus a little bit. That's my excuse now. But there's a show that came on. I kind of caught a little bit and I started watching it. I think it's called Evil Kin. And they interview, the two shows I saw were these women who grew up in a family or were married to men that turned out to be serial killers or terrible, wicked people.
Wow.
And they interview them now after the fact. One of them was a woman who's, they took it all the way through. Her father was executed, and she was there with him a day or two before he was executed in the prison, and then he was put to death some years ago in Indiana, and they interviewed her about the whole experience of growing up in this family. And what you get out of it, among many other things, is pretty chilling, is that these women have the truth right in front of them over and over again, year after year, incident after incident, and they refuse to believe it and or act on it. It serves their interest to not confront it or do something about it at the time. Now, they're regretful of that now because they see the whole picture better. But And I don't know what I would do in that situation, so don't take that as a stern judgment against them. But I do know, I do see this principle, that for whatever interest they have in their own self, they refuse to see the truth, and they pay a heavy, heavy price. Others around them pay a price sometimes because of their unwillingness to see the truth that's right in front of them, and they lose their life over it. But it's a very chilling thing to not be able to recognize the truth. And the real painful thing, I believe, is that some of these folks realize that this situation got worse and continued into like it did because I was blind. I was seeking my own safety or security or afraid, and so therefore I said nothing and did nothing. And it's a very chilling show.
Well, it's easy to do, Mike. And you and I have talked a little bit about what I said, about all the things that I look back on my life, the opportunities that I missed. Well, why were they missed?
What?
Because I was concentrating on something other than what God meant for me to be concentrating
now,
on.
Let's suppose I became a friend of one of these ladies in this show or was a counselor of theirs. How can I actually help them if I refuse to help them see the whole truth of the matter? The truth about themselves, about the other person, about his actions, their actions. Until they came to grips with the truth of this, they could never be set free and find any relief for their pain. They still suffer pain. But the only hope they had in any kind of, for any kind of relief and benefit was eventually to come to grips with what was true. And some of the things that they had to come to grips with was their fault, their failure, as well as the failure of this terrible, horrible person, evil person.
I think we've talked
about both of them failed.
Right. We've talked about this before. It takes two things. It takes the truth, and it takes courage and will to do that.
Yes, courage. And I that's where we can benefit those around us by helping them have the courage to face up to truth in their life in a good way, to build them up and strengthen them, edify them. But as long as we just believe everything they say as if that's all there is, and we do not, and we have so much sympathy for them as a victim that we do not understand that victims often sin also, then we can't help them. I'm not saying the sin of one is equal to the other. I'm not saying the one is as evil as the other, but both bear responsibility in these matters. And until even though they may be unequal, all those things, but there's no moving forward until both are understood. And until you do, you just aren't going to make it.
And the other thing is, I am convinced that Satan rejoices in the lie.
He does.
He is a liar from the beginning and a murderer.
He rejoices in those things.
If
your spouse commits adultery against you, but you refuse to even consider or look at the fact that you may have had a role in some of this, even though they're guilty of their sin, when you move on from that relationship, or if you stay in it, you still won't be able to fix it. And you won't be able to fix the next marriage you get into because you won't ever look at the truth. Those are hard things. That's hard. Well, Gary, we got about a minute left here. So,
I've left you
wrap this up and we'll close off.
Train yourself to see these things. And in order to do that, you have to know what's in the Word of God.
You do. And that's why the truth of Jesus Christ will eventually set us free and we can have some relief. Thank you for listening today. We really appreciate it. Thank you for listening each week to We Are Just Christians. We want to invite you to our assembly. We meet at 2196 Southwest Savona Boulevard here in Port St. Lucie, 2196 Southwest Savona Boulevard. That's behind the little Milk and Things shopping center there at California and Savona on the west side of the road. We'd be glad to have you come meet with us at 10, 11, and 6 today. And hope that you can take a look at our website, wearejustchristians.com. Wearejustchristians.com. May God bless you this week as you seek to do His will. And tune in again next week to We Are Just Christians. Thanks for listening.
Oh, fill my cup,